welcome to the fourth edition of Vox Populi, the show by atheists for atheists. In this episode, we discuss evangelism, both of the atheistic and religious varieties. On the one hand, religious people are quite fond of evangelizing us, and religious ideas are an integral part of the media. On the other hand, it can be tempting for us to try to evangelize religious people. Our first question is, what could convert you to Christianity? If your answer is nothing, why?
I like to think that rational people are not converted, but rather convinced. Conversion is a strange and scary notion. It suggests some kind of change of the individual's personality, a shift in their very way of thinking and experiencing the world. Almost by definition, I distrust conversion. If you have to convert to a position, then there's something wrong with you and or the position. If the question is, what would convince you that Christianity is true, then the answer is the same as what would convince me that it's true that 2 and 2 equals 4, or that the earth is round, or that the acceleration of gravity is 32 feet per second per second. That is, some unambiguous evidence that the claim is true. As Thomas Huxley, the man who coined the term agnosticism, put it, we should not claim to know anything unless we can demonstrate the basis for our knowledge. Agnosticism, he said, is not some position between knowing and not knowing. It's not a creed, he wrote explicitly, and it is not a vague or indifferent throwing up of one's hands saying, I don't know. It's mental hygiene, admitting when you know something and when you don't, and not jumping to conclusions or letting yourself be converted without any evidence. The question about other religions highlights a part of the point. Why are people so focused on converting to Christianity? It's just one of probably thousands of religions in the world. Besides, which particular sect of Christianity? Catholicism? Baptism? Mormonism? Seventh-day Adventism? You cannot convert to Christianity, but only to one of the many, many sects of it. And because that means that you think not only that Christianity is correct and all the other religions are wrong, but that your sect of Christianity is correct and all the other sects are wrong. That seems like foolish arrogance to me. I've become accustomed to saying that the best argument against any religion is all the other religions. Anyone who converts to one is rejecting all the others. The problem is, any possible evidence of religion could be evidence for any of the religions. Say you decide that the universe has design. Well, the designer could be God, or Allah, or Vishnu, or Zeus, or Osiris, or any god. If you're convinced that prayers are answered, it could be any god answering them, or something other than a god. If you find scriptures convincing, there are lots of scriptures out there, any of which could be and is convincing to someone. In the end, clear and critical thinking leads us to conclude that all religions are wrong about their spiritual or supernatural claims. Not only does science disagree with all of them, but they all disagree with each other. Why would you want to be converted to something that is almost certainly wrong? What would convince me that the earth is flat? That is, convert me to flat earthism? Hopefully nothing, since it's false.
Well, the thing that would convert me to Christianity would be evidence of a Christian God at work. And that doesn't involve having feelings or noticing strange coincidences. It involves something like a verifiable and empirical evidence of a Christian God, like a chariot of fire flying through the sky, a gigantic flood covering the earth, or a talking flaming bush, or maybe Jesus coming down from the heavens. That would be pretty unmistakable sign. The same thing goes for any other religion. If I saw Zeus throwing lightning bolts around, maybe I would convert to the Greek religions or Roman religions. If I saw Allah coming through the sky, maybe I'd convert to Islam. Probably wouldn't like it, but I wouldn't have much of a choice because it would just be, you know, verifiable, inescapable truth, rather than something you read in a book or feel, you know, with your feelings. But that's a big part of the problem, honestly, is that no one can give empirical evidence of some sort of immaterial being, immaterial God. That's why it relies on faith at the center of it. All the major religions today do the same thing, and they rely on faith rather than evidence.
Not much. Not anything, probably. Well, save Jesus himself. I suppose if one night the stars spelled out Jesus lives, or God took me up to heaven and showed me around, I'd be pretty convinced. But the fact is, that, you know, that's not going to happen, at least anytime soon. So, there's no experiment that I know of that can currently be done that would convince me religion was true. Otherwise, in all my research, I'm sure I would have found it by now. At least I would have hoped so. So, my current answer, it's got to be nothing. And, the reason, it's pretty simple, right? Because we gain knowledge using our senses. We use our senses to perform an experiment, and we rely on the outcome of the experiment. We assume that our senses are going to interpret evidence accurately, and that it's going to truly represent what happened in the real world. And so I would just have to rely on an experiment to determine it. There's nothing else other than an experiment that could determine whether or not God existed, or that Christianity was true, or anything like that. So, considering that currently there's no experiment to do it, then there's no empirical evidence, and so I have absolutely no reason to ever be converted until that evidence is brought about. But, like I said, I don't see that happening anytime soon, so there you have it.
Frankly, nothing could convert me to Christianity or any religion, for that matter. I spent my formative years, most of my life, as a devout Christian, and I would still be one today were it not for two things, my brain and reality. This is a funny thing to say, but it is also very serious. And you see, the information that my brain has collected and processed about Christianity, and to a large extent all religions, informs me in no uncertain terms that no matter what I might want to happen, it will never happen that a deity or any supernatural being is found to exist. They simply can't, and this fact is common sense to anyone who has approached the issue with an open mind. And I'm sorry if this hurts anyone's feelings or ego. So, given that religions are founded on and supported by beliefs in deities and supernatural beings, my brain, my conscious self, everything that makes me who I am from experience and thought, will never allow me to convert to a religion. To be blunt, if I die and find that heaven does exist, there is still no chance in hell that I will convert to Christianity. Not that it would matter at that point anyway.
In the 20th chapter of the Gospel of John, Jesus is recorded as appearing to his disciples for the first time as a group after his resurrection Easter evening. After appearing to them, he shows them his hands and his side, presumably still containing the injuries that were received during his crucifixion. At this, the disciples rejoiced. But Thomas was not present with them, and when the other disciples told him what they had seen, he was doubtful. "Unless I see it for myself, I would not believe," he said. The disciples went a full week with this doubter in their midst, and though there's nothing recorded in the text, I can only imagine their arguments. The next week, the disciples were gathered together again in the same room as before, and Jesus appeared to them again. This time, he singled out Thomas and told him to place his fingers in his crucifixion wounds, to experience them for himself. At this, Thomas accepts Jesus as the real deal. Now, even though Jesus goes on to say that those who believe without evidence are blessed, there's no condemnation of Thomas for his skepticism. I love this story, and as an atheist, it's probably my favorite story in the Bible. The story of Thomas is an implied realization on the part of the Bible writers that the story of Jesus is just too fantastical to be believed by people unless they've seen it for themselves. Thomas really isn't any different from any of the other disciples. Remember that every single person who accepted Jesus' resurrection had also seen him for themselves. That includes Mary Magdalene, Simon Peter, and all the others. Now, why didn't Jesus just give Thomas an angry retort, just like that which was given to Sarah when she laughed at the idea of God's omnipotence? I think it's because Jesus knew that the idea of a person coming back from the dead was even more unbelievable than the idea of a 90-year-old woman giving birth. Because of this, he was all too willing to indulge Thomas' skepticism with extraordinary evidence, materializing through a locked door and providing tactile experience of his crucifixion wounds. That's why I say, as an atheist, that I am no different than Thomas. As justified as Thomas was in being doubtful, I am as well. And as Thomas was satisfied with a personal visit from a resurrected Jesus, I don't think I'd be happy with anything less. So that's what I'm waiting for. But until that happens, you won't see me in church on Sunday.
Is there a way to reconcile the need for tolerance in society with religious evangelism? Can religion exist without evangelism?
The question of tolerance, of intolerance, is not limited to religion. We ask ourselves whether we must tolerate racists, like the KKK, or sexists, or other hard-headed nutcases. Of course, there is not just one kind of tolerance. As I discuss in my book, Natural Atheism, there are three levels of tolerance. Level one is allowing the position or person to exist unmolested, that is, not persecuting them for their opinions. I think we should agree that at least this type of tolerance is due to everyone. We're not going to hurt or kill anyone for their beliefs, however wrong or stupid. After all, it's the unpopular positions that need protection in a society like ours. The popular ones can take care of themselves. Level two of tolerance is accepting opinions that you don't like as equally welcome in the public square. That is, if the KKK wants to march in the streets, they have the same right as anyone else with a sensible agenda. They can expect some protest and counter-demonstration, but as long as no one gets violent, anyone can express a view. Notice, we do not, nor do we have to, tolerate violence. That's why we have jails. Even the most tolerant society does not tolerate everything. Toleration is not and cannot be absolute. It has its limits. Level three of tolerance is actually celebrating and promoting views that you don't share or like. Many critics of gay rights and marriage see this as the position that schools or society in general have taken, supposedly promoting homosexuality. Whether or not that's the case is irrelevant here. It could be legitimately defended that I am not going to persecute you for your views, and I am going to grant you equal status and protection for yours, but I am still not going to help you advance them. I accept the KKK's right to march, but I don't march with them, nor can they use my or any public money to do so. So, religious evangelism can and must be tolerated in the sense of levels one and two. We're not going to persecute anyone, unlike the way they used to persecute us, and probably would again if they could, nor deny them access to the public square. But we do not have to celebrate them, or promote them, or congratulate them as good, and we absolutely have the right to stop violent and intrusive behaviors. Must all religion be evangelical? The answer is unequivocally no. In fact, most religions that have ever existed had no concept of evangelism, if by that we mean attempting to proselytize and convert others. For most of history, religions were local things. Each group or society had its own, and the religion did not apply anywhere else. It would be pointless to spread it. It is a very particular kind of religion that thinks that it is the only true one and must convert everyone else, destroying other religions along the way. Such religions are dangerous by nature, and we should be wary of them wherever we find them.
I guess that depends on how we define religious evangelism, right? Because if we're talking about Spanish Inquisition-style evangelism, where you're going to get your head chopped off if you don't believe in Jesus, then something probably needs to give, right? But, you know, if we're just talking about preachers preaching in church or even on a TV network, that's fine as far as I'm concerned. And it certainly can exist without evangelism. That is, religion can certainly exist without evangelism. Just look, for example, at Judaism, or the Baha'i faith, or Hinduism, or Buddhism, or any of those things, right? I mean, they'll come around knocking on your door and preaching to you at all hours of the night and day, and they're not trying to get their words heard in the state and all that stuff. So, yeah, there's certainly religions that aren't evangelist religions. And there's certainly a way to reconcile the need for tolerance with evangelism. Just don't be so sensitive. How about that? In other words, as long as the evangelists keep it among themselves and don't throw it on me, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
If there's a need for anything right now, then it would be the need for hostility towards abusive systems like religion and the state. Those nutcases are just everywhere. And people put up with it. I mean, they really put up with it. They will whine and groan their entire lives about hourly news of abusive priests and stone evil, corrupt, warmongering politicians, and still, they still will not question their culture-bred delusions of these abusive institutions being good. It's simply amazing. Can religion exist without evangelism? Children are coerced into religion through emotional and physical bullying. And no adult becomes religious without a significant history of this kind of emotional manipulation in his or her past. You don't just wander into becoming religious if you're a healthy human being. So, if you call that evangelism, then no, religion can't survive without it.
At the end of the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus tells his disciples, "Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations." This is a pretty bold commission. Make disciples of all nations, he says, not offer discipleship to all nations. It's a very aggressive charge that Christians feel burdened with, and it's one that runs completely counter to the idea of religious tolerance. In fact, in conservative evangelical Christian circles, tolerance is as hateful a word as homosexuality, and often both are uttered within the same breath. But is tolerance really such a bad thing? Unfortunately, recognition and respect for the beliefs of others is not part of the Christian way of life, and neither is peaceful coexistence. In chapter 10 of Matthew's Gospel, Jesus says, "Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and one's foes will be members of one's own household." Clearly, this is an angry, aggressive, and bloody evangelism that Jesus himself is advocating, and we can see this reflected in the most conservative and fundamentalist sectors of Christian evangelism, no less dangerous than Muslim or even, though usually ignored, Jewish fundamentalism. For further reading on this subject, I highly recommend Karen Armstrong's book, The Battle for God. But are all religions subject to the same kind of aggressive evangelism? Not by half. Have you ever received bulk mail literature from the Buddhists, Taoists, or Hindus? These religions thrive through parent-child connection and strong association with cultural identity. Aside from a major reformation, Christianity will continue to evangelize until, as Jesus commands, all the nations are disciples. The best defense being a good offense, I favor aggressive atheist evangelism to counter the irrationality of Christianity.
The only way for evangelism and tolerance of religious beliefs and disbeliefs to coexist, as far as I can see, is for religions to become entirely personal in nature. And let's be honest, that's not about to happen. Religions champion absolutist black and white worldviews. Theists all share the ridiculous presumption that life will become whatever they want it to be, that reality will, in essence, bow to their beliefs. This is patently ridiculous, absurd, and if I might say so, insane. I mean, it seems that you really have to be insane to believe that a God exists. Or maybe you just have to give up on life, quit thinking altogether after, say, the age of 6. Whatever the cause of sustained religious belief into adulthood, it isn't reason. And this is why I find it laughable to expect religions to tolerate one another. Also, look at history. When have religions ever gotten along? Christians can't decide what to believe about their own religion, and this has led to millions and millions of gruesome, horrific deaths. If a single religion can't tolerate itself, then why on earth would we expect it to tolerate other religions?
I'm in favor of religious evangelism. I'm in favor of any kind of evangelism, because to me, evangelism is putting out your ideas and the arguments for the worldview that you subscribe to and trying to get other people to go along with you and trying to convince others. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a free marketplace of ideas. That's just non-censorship. So I think religious evangelism is something that can definitely exist in society peacefully. It just, people have to become more educated and learn what is and is not a good argument for something to believe in. You can't sit there and try and silence any of these things. And religion can also exist without evangelism, although it wouldn't be nearly as effective. But I think that you can evangelize any kind of idea. You don't have to be religious to be an evangelist. You don't even have to be evangelizing religion. You could be evangelizing atheism or science or a certain kind of philosophy or some other non-religious idea, you know. Evangelism is just an enthusiastic form of trying to convince others of something you believe in.
Do you ever try to deconvert people you know? Why or why not? Are there methods you find that work better than others?
Yes, sure. When the subject of religion comes up, I will give it my best shot. But you know, people aren't open and honest about it, so usually the topic doesn't come up or is avoided.
Short answer, no. No, and there's an easy reason for that. The reason is, I don't think it's possible to deconvert someone. I really don't. after all of my discussion and debate with all different people from all different religions and non-religions, I'm pretty convinced at this point that it's only possible to deconvert yourself. So I don't even bother trying to deconvert anyone. You know, I could talk until I was blue in the face, and they're still going to believe exactly what they want to believe. So I don't see any point in trying to deconvert them. I mean, I'll talk about it if they're interested. I'll point out why atheism is true and why whatever their religion is false. But personally, I don't consider that trying to deconvert them, since I have no intention to do so, and, you know, I don't expect them to change their mind based on my word alone. That's exactly what my point is, that someone has to change their mind themselves. Their mind is not going to be made up for them. Whatever they want to believe, that's what they're going to believe. So you can put all the evidence out in front of them, and you can put a little spin on it if you want to, but they're going to have to, in the end, look at the evidence themselves and decide for themselves. So that's the only way they're going to get deconverted.
I most definitely try to deconvert people I know. In fact, I've succeeded in deconverting a handful of people to either agnosticism or atheism. And the reason I do so is because I believe in a free marketplace of ideas where everyone has the ability to support and present the arguments for their position. And I believe that atheism is the correct one and has a very powerful argument, and the most powerful argument. And I think that atheism's strength lies in its logical argument and its reality-based arguments, you know. One of the problems is that it's hard to throw at a lot of people and try and convince them, because a lot of people are used to being convinced about things on emotional levels for emotional reasons, especially religions. So when you try and present to them something that says logically this and philosophically that, and all these things you believed in and put so much emotional energy into and so much trust and love into is just simply not real, people are going to reject that, because people don't want to hear the logical arguments. They want to believe in what makes them feel better, and emotionally they get that satisfaction.
Last year I wrote a letter to my immediate family announcing that I'm an atheist. It was written mostly as an announcement, but I'll be honest and admit that the fantasy of them asking me questions and concluding that their beliefs have room for doubt, it did cross my mind. I mean, I certainly did not want them to continue believing in a belief system that is slowly but surely beneath the surface eroding their quality of life. Discussing religion is difficult from my perspective. I'm unsure how best to talk to theists about their beliefs. I want to be honest and not lie to them, since I spent most of my life believing lies. But I don't want to be cruel in my presentation. I mean, this is especially difficult because, from my perspective, religion is pure hogwash. Believing in a religion is the same as allowing yourself to be brainwashed, to destroy an entire life for the comfort of a single thought. Like, you know, seeing a dead relative after death. I don't want people to suffer, even for a moment, but I do want them to face reality and stop, you know, killing one another over primitive agendas and deeply held beliefs about reality. The best method to deconvert theists is probably through reason with an ounce of compassion.
How do you deal with a media which mostly perpetuates belief systems? What are your favorite TV shows?
In America, the vast majority of people believe in God, or at least are God-friendly, if not overtly Christian. But still, parodic portrayals of religious people are usually excellent comedy fodder, as seen in two of my favorite shows. In the comedy Arrested Development, George Michael Bluth dates a fundamentalist Christian girl, which offers no end of religion gags, including her family conducting their Christmas celebration on Jerusalem time, creepy family members singing hymns out of tune, a sexually repressed mother, and even a church and state fair. At an awkward meeting with her parents, his father Michael Bluth fumbles when he finds out her father is a minister.
This is my father, Pastor Terry Veal.
Oh, Pastor!
People treat you so differently when they find out you're a man of God.
Oh, believe me, I know.
Oh, are you a church-going man?
I am. Sometimes. Yes, I don't go religiously. I mean, I'm not a nut about it. Because there is no such thing as a nut when it comes to religion, Pastor.
I've met a few.
I'm sure if you look a little bit closer, you'll find some very earnest people that are just doing their best.
What are you doing, Dad?
In the American version of the comedy The Office, the character Angela is portrayed as a harshly judgmental Christian woman, always casting scorn on her coworkers and lacking even the humor to play a simple game.
Okay, so, 3 books on a desert island. Angela.
The Bible.
That's 1 book. You've got 2 others.
A Purpose-Driven Life.
Nice. 3rd book.
No.
Okay, Phyllis.
The Da Vinci Code. The Da Vinci Code. I would take the Da Vinci Code, so I could burn the Da Vinci Code.
Okay, great. That's going to keep you warm for like 7 seconds.
As long as shows like these are around, I'll definitely enjoy tuning in.
Fortunately for me, I have an outlet for responding to media that perpetuates belief systems. I can respond to articles that I read on the internet or in the newspaper, on my own blog, Kill the Afterlife, and I'll usually dissect what happened in the article and point out issues with the belief systems that they perpetuate. And some of my favorite TV shows are definitely shows that you'll find on, like, the Science Channel or Discovery Channel and stuff like that. I love Carl Sagan's Cosmos, and that was on recently on the Science Channel about a month ago. I don't think it's on there anymore, so I need to find that DVD. And another show I like a lot, actually, is The Simpsons, which is really a very anti-religious show if you see the subtle things inside the writing. I think a lot of people agree with me, though, that they love The Simpsons. I'll bet a lot of Christians love it, too, and don't really realize how much it makes fun of religion, and especially Christianity. But if any of you have not seen Cosmos that are listening to this right now, I highly recommend you locate a copy of that somehow, because it's really one of the best astronomy and science shows that was ever made. Even though it was in the 80s, it's still extremely relevant today. And Carl Sagan is a fascinating person. You just can't help but really admire him and love the guy and the way he talks and the way he describes things. It's just absolutely amazing.
How do you deal with the media, which, at least in the US, mostly perpetuates belief systems? I grind my teeth until the next scene or avoid them altogether. Lately, I even turn off The Daily Show when the socialistic innuendo gets too much.
Ooh, that's a good one. I laugh at it. That's the best way to deal with the religious media, at least in my opinion. Whenever I see religion in the news, you know, I see it on MSNBC, and they have these religious quote-unquote debates on there. I just can't do anything but laugh. That's really all I can do. Because it's so funny. Honestly, they'll get a couple of religious people on there, and they'll get the token atheist in a debate, and the token atheist will be allowed to say, maybe, if he's lucky, 2.5 words before it gets cut off. And the 3 religious people, you know, discuss about some religious thing and pray to each other, something like that. I mean, I think it's hilarious, all these people that listen to Rush Limbaugh and the debates on Fox News and all that stuff. It's great. No problem there. I think it's just funny, personally. You know, I'd much rather watch The Simpsons or Family Guy or Futurama or Law and Order or something like that. You know, TV's for entertainment. And I get a lot of my news from the internet nowadays, so I don't need to watch Fox or CNN or any of those liberal or conservative media, so that's the way I deal with it.
Okay, let me be clear and say that I never watch television. No, I take that back. I watch movies all the time. Too much, in fact. But I have not subscribed to cable television in over 2 years, and due to bad reception or broken TV, I can't get basic channels where I live. So I'm largely unaware of how the media currently depicts religious beliefs on television, and I am so much happier for it. I mean, it's the one form of ignorance that I'm happy to admit. How do I deal with the media? I turn it off, saving at least $40 a month. However, I watched cable television for over 20 consecutive years, and given what I now watch online from clips and what I read, it appears that nothing has really changed in the media's basic sentiment or stance regarding this issue. The only welcome exception that comes to mind is The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, where religious beliefs are routinely criticized for irrationality, as they should be. Keep in mind that we bloggers, I imagine most of you are bloggers, are very much part of the media, if only in small ways. We're not at all insignificant when considered as a body of educated, aware individuals voicing their opinions to millions of visitors. We do make a difference.
Our team was Robert Dawson, David Eller, Edward Grieve, Aaron Kinney, Niels van der Linden, and Zachary Moore. An archive of this feature is available on hellboundalley.com/voxpopuli. Email us at ally@hellboundalley.com if you have comments or suggestions for new questions. Thank you, everyone, for their great work, and we'll be back in 2 weeks for more insightful answers. This was Vox Populi, the voices of atheism.